statistic.
That's what we were talking about last night.
What is it with this core shit? It seems very familiar.
It's comfy.
It's not new.
We're used to sitting in it.
I have found that when there's something I can't get rid of, it's because I kind of don't want to. In some way, I identify myself with it, and I want to hold on to it, so you have to...
Some kind of wrap. Some kind of wrap.
Stop wanting it.
Or
you have to sort of see it in a different way.
Or you just let it be. You know, you stop resisting it and let it be. Okay.
Let's say I have a state of a high crescendo manic episode where you think maybe you're gone, right? And so if you've had that, you know, visitation, you can ask yourself, was that comforting to be completely outside the realm of the familiarity of your signature? Right? It's not really that comfortable. So we might think, if you know, it's a long list of if onlys and if that's and such that, so that I don't have to look the same way or think the same way or feel the same way. But if you're really, really confronted with the discontinuity and the familiarity of yourself, you're not necessarily going to be that happy about it. We might like to enjoy, or think we would like to enjoy, much greater bandwidth or flexibility in our being. But if it comes to visit, I bet you you're going to recoil.
The last thing we want.
It could turn out to be. And so it's interesting that, you know, we peace and freedom and compassion and equanimity and enlightenment even, why not throw that in there? But you see, all of those are ideas, right? Those are like flavors. They're like accoutrements of self. So we want these things, but we want them to appear within the familiarity of myself and how I frame my experience. If any of those things start to unseat me from the familiarity or the inertia of myself, I might not be so happy about it.
How does anybody ever get over that person? And is there any choice? Is it really a choice? Is there a point at which it's a choice where you dive in or you recoil and say, nah, I didn't really mean it. I don't want to go that far.
You can go both ways. You know, you can look at your prior or present or imaginary future experience, and it's loaded with choice. You know, who would argue with that? You can also look at all that stuff and see unequivocally there was no choice ever, 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 never, not now, ever. Fuck me. Yeah, you can also go there and go, whoa, this is really broadcasting itself. And the appearance of choice is just, it's a hallucination. It's an aftermath. There's no choice.
I'm finally really getting into this is a dream. It's like a problem starts to arise, and it's like, this isn't real. It just like seems stupid to worry about it.
Yeah.
Like, well, this is a dream. Like, then it's like, yes. I can't control what's happening.
Well, if dissolution of self is possible, or even one is interested in it, you know, as a discovery vector, you could see it as kind of a sine wave. Like early on, you know, we're invested in everything that we think that we are, and overwhelmed with panic and fear and regret and acting out and, you know, the whole shebang. And on the sine wave, you know, maybe some of that behavior starts to relax. Maybe humor and generosity replaces, you know, fear and greed. So you can see up to a point there are shifts, enviable shifts, that usually everyone else enjoys. I never do, but enviable shifts in, you know, in the one human behavior becoming more elastic, if not, dare I say, joyful. Now how far is that on the whole, you know, sine wave? Is that like in the first third, or, you know, somewhere toward the center, or toward the, you know, or is it really just like 1%? You know, it's just like 1% all the way down here. Like the entirety of human life and improving your human life and bailing out of suffering and accomplishing spiritual feats of grandeur really hang out within the first 1% of the sine wave. Everything else is what we have yet, right, to discover. It's just an interesting way to play with it. Like, we think, oh, no, no. Suffering, suffering, suffering. Recovery, recovery. Course in miracles. Meditation, meditation. You know, shamanism. You know, renunciation. Happy with myself. Enlightenment, dead. And so the way that we even conjure the interest in remedies for our crappy fucking lives all remain in a very, very narrow bandwidth of mistaken identity. You know, as this disembodied euphoria starts to get under your skin, you find yourself, not by any decision, having less and less reference or referral to the quality and nature of your human life and what's happening in it. How free do you want to be? In the great lamentation of human suffering is, what, the entirety of the rainbow? Or it's just, you know, near 1%. And then the resolution of it is somewhere in the 1 to 2% range. After that, Bob's your uncle. It's an Australian thing, I think. When everything's going swell, it's Bob's your uncle.
I'm going to start using that.
What do I know? It's funny. But see, this is the reason to bring it up, not that it's true or valuable in any way, but when you can reflect on your present experience and how you could say automatically we anthropomorphize that as me, as self, as life, as suffering, as irritability, as impatience, right? The core wound, the core shit. That's how we frame ourselves, and we do so kind of automatically, right? We don't ask anyone's permission to do that, and everyone seems to agree with everyone else when it comes to suffering and what's right and what's wrong, that we all hang out within this very tiny ball of, you know, presumed identity. And then that becomes, that's why I eat differently, and that's why I meditate, and that's why I do the work, and that's why I wear all cotton, and that's why, you know, I recycle with, you know, aplomb. I wear hemp. I smoke and wear hemp. You know, the other day I was naked. I smoked all my clothes. I was high as a kite and all naked. Everything I was wearing was just ashes on the ground. I hate when that happens. Okay. So what happens if we see that you could call the reflex or the habit to frame the entirety of experience through the presumption of, let's call, human sentiment? Now it's a different ballgame.
A lot of bandwidth that's freed up. Because it's not a part of the deal anymore.
I'm sorry. It can be
okay.
Absolutely
inebriated. No butter. Yep. Chris Bacon.
Yeah.
And a big syrup. Tea.
How the smoked salmon platter. And could I have double arugula on that? And no onions and instead cucumbers, please.
You might have to order that in Spanish.
No, I'll Espanol.
Dave writes it in Spanish.
Yes.
That's right.
I'll do a read in Spanish.
And then say, Adderplay, Postme, Onione, Apple Day.
So if nothing happened to you yesterday that's worth reporting, or let's say nothing happened to you for the entirety of your so-called life worth reporting. If nothing happened to you a moment ago or even this morning, worth reporting. Where does your vitality go? Where does your humor go? Where does your interest go?
Things get really funny in the present moment. There's a lot of humor. Just objects are funny.
Objects, perception, subjectivity, identification, the constant swarming of sensation and ideation. When you start to look at the constant swarming of sensation and ideation, it's, let's just say, a mechanical, you know, byproduct of whatever this is, why be so interested in it? I mean, if you are of the nature of disembodied fascination, of disembodied euphoria, you're not really from here, then why take interest in what appears to be something that has imposed itself upon you, like your life? Everyone wants to solve their life, resolve their life. But if you just happen to be God, like, why do you care?
Don't you feel like that's what's playing, kind of?
Because
that's what's playing. That's what's on.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess you can treat it like it's some tedious person at a party you don't want to listen to.
Yourself, I know.
It's on your shoes and you're trying to scrape off. Mm-hmm.
You're like, oh, how do I get out of this conversation?
Right. Oh, I think my dog's on fire. I have to go. You don't have a dog. Oh. I mean, there's this vitality which you can't shake. There's presence which you can't shake. Our habit is to occupy this more or less uninvited and you would dare say unwelcome presence. We entertain ourselves because we don't know what else to do. Because this doesn't quit. It's not like you were born. That's kind of bullshit. But this is so. And you're like, what the hell is this? Leave me the fuck alone. Get off my cloud. Hey, you. Get off of my cloud. And so we occupy this, you know, uninvited guest, namely irrefutability as presence, and we fill it with thoughts of my life because we don't know what else to do with it. So we become overwhelmed, you could say, voluntarily, involuntarily, it doesn't really matter, with the imagination that something happened to you ever, or that it might even be happening to you now. But it's not true. So what need have we of religions? How about zero? Or solutions for suffering? How about none at all? Save your money. Go bowling.
Well, I guess that ends these breakfasts.
Pretty much. Turns it right off. It's been nice seeing you all, and have a nice day. But you can see how the fixity of imagining that I exist, that something is happening to me, has happened to me, will happen to me, and I'd better deploy the work so that I suffer minimally. What the F are you talking about? Right? We're unwilling to, well, nah, this group is kind of willing. Most folks, you could say, are unwilling to pierce the myth of one's life as an instantaneity. Not as a sine wave, not as a process, not as a resolution, not as an agreement, but you pierce the myth of your life as an instantaneity, which happens to be this. And you don't give a fluck, die flying donut fuck at what you think happened to you, or anybody else for that matter. I mean, that's how richly and frighteningly, beautifully marvelous you are. This is. You're the shit. You are over the top. and the habit of reflecting on what appears to be free time with the likes of me is just a bad habit. It's not real.
Free time?
Well, it's all free time. It's all free time. I mean, even if you're at the shirt factory, it's all free time. I mean, why humans condemn other humans, you know, to chattel, right, for the sake of manufacturing things for Land's End, I don't know. But when you look at, you know, the Dzogchen bozos or the Kashmiri bozos or the Buddhist bozos, or you could go on and on, you know, because they're all bozos. They just make up a bunch of crap about the nature of this. But it's not true what they're saying about this. The five of these, the eight of those, the seven of those, the four questions plus the turnaround. You know, it's not true.
You forgot three. What about the Holy Trinity?
The Trinity thing, the Holy Spirit thing. All of this is made up. You see, it's like color forms. And then we grab the book and we start smacking the book, and the next thing we know, we're killing everyone, you know, over there because they're not reading the book. Well, that book turned out to be handy. When is the fucking species gonna wake up from the imposition of all of these superstitions? I mean, don't wait for them. Don't bodhisattva on me. Because that's a foolish bet.
It doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work. If you try to bodhisattva on this, and you're going to wait around for someone other than you to accomplish something, that's a bad idea.
Join us?
Yeah. We'll add another table. We might be able to
switch in over here.
Okay,
we
can call that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Those are
kind of
fine.
Their chair
might
be a little bit
better.
Her chair is not going to work. You need a higher chair.
Fine.
Yeah? Okay.
I'm fine.
Actually, we're okay.
Are you sure, Dave? We could get you a higher chair.
I know.
We can make a spot for you on the bench if that would work, too.
Dolores, are you going to have something to eat? We have another table.
Yeah.
Come on,
but we're not.
Yeah, there we go.
I think she said she's fine in the chair she's in. That's what I heard.
Another table, anyway.
This is how we're working.
Come on over here,
Where did you leave off? Oh, fucking bodhisattva.
Decaf.
Decaf, please. Yeah.
Thanks so much.
And a little more cream.
One time with Janora.
There is an aliveness to it.
Drink acid, eat Pepsi.
Better living with
over the counter pharmacy. So in a given instant, not that there are any, you could say you have a choice, you don't really. Presence is present. Presence doesn't necessarily mean anything. Present doesn't necessarily mean anything. Because no one knows how to articulate that this is so. Because once you articulate that this is so, you're instantaneously in a referential loop. Right? Because this is so is not, it's not so because you say that it's so. It's already so. Isn't your primary nature already so? Long before you say anything about it, before you believe anything, before you have a superstition, before you slam the book, before you go to exotic countries and convert everyone to your belief system, this is so. Or kill them if they resist. So here's the so-ness or the suchness or the presence, which is nothing at all really, but it's truly irrefutable. It makes no demand upon you except that it won't quit. But it's not interested in what you have to say. And that, whatever it is or isn't, happens to be unencumberedly liberated to the bone. Then you make up a story. In other words, you fill the space, you fill the emptiness with yourself as something. Well, now you got a problem.
But that is it. That is present also. So, and whatever fills the emptiness is.
Well,
it.
Sure.
But
sure it is.
No wrong, no matter what you do.
Sure it is. Looking at the genesis of identity, which of course has to be presence also, as if there were presence, right?
Part of the freedom.
Yes.
Fuck up. Or
yes.
You can't not fuck up, so who gives a fuck?
Well, you're more advanced than me. I don't know what else to say.
Well,
you know, you just like to get to the end of the book faster than I can. Consciousness is like taffy, right? So if you smack taffy too hard or pull on it too quickly, you know, it'll break.
That must be my problem.
Yeah, so understanding that it's taffy, you want to kind of lean into it, you know, get a little adhesion, and then, yeah, right? You start to do that. And then someone's attention, right, someone's imagination, someone's elasticity can kind of go with you. So we're not really interested in an end game, even if it's, of course, an all-inclusive revelation. Because that may or may not be of benefit, right, to the, let's just call it the journey of the discovery. And there is no end game, because even though we can come to fantastic conclusions about the inclusivity of everything, still it doesn't resolve, does it? It doesn't land you anywhere. So that's why, at least for me, and everyone has their own sentiment and style, it's like, play with the taffy. Hook awareness, see if it's available, feel it, and then paint with it. You can notice that this primacy of spaciousness or attentivity or awareness has no limitation, no content, no preference, no boundary, no time, and no space. Irrefutability is not marred by time or space or preference. Thought, you could say, is marred by time and space and preference. Thought operates by virtue of comparison. comparison suggests boundary. That sense of boundary through referential assertion, you could say, is responsible for the sense of I. Or maybe the sense of I is even subtler than that, and the way that thought operates is downstream of the sense of I. It's hard to say what, right? It's hard to say whether how this might be chicken or egg. Because irrefutability is unencumbered as the culmination of one's lifelong pursuit of liberation. Bada boom, you're welcome, have a nice day. But we appear to go through this miracle in a temporal or spatial or identified manner. And we accumulate stories and sensations in all kinds of ways that we convince ourselves that we're insufficient or we're suffering or we're irritable or we'd be much better off if we can only do the final turnaround. You know, it's off the edge of the observation deck at the Grand Canyon. Whoop! No, I meant turn around psychologically. No, come back.
Yeah. I was, you know, the squirrel mind in my mind.
Yes.
Squirrel brain loose. So I had this kind of like impression that it tries to get my attention, you know, if it's not trying to, like, say, you know, remind me of some bad thing I did and make it seem like, oh, that was really horrible, for that 500th time, and when I tried to, like, process that or whatever, then it's trying to seduce me into, you know, I should be a superhero in some way.
Yes.
Do something.
Right.
Or, like, any one of a number of things, right?
Any one of a number of things, pretty much nonstop.
Right. So I thought, well, maybe, and this might be yet another conjure, if I sort of tame the mind, and good luck with that, I guess, but
right.
Not tame it, but say, okay, you can exist here with us, the real me, whatever that is.
Right.
We'll play.
If you behave. Sounds like Pebble Hill. So this is yes. Now, so one imagines that we are of the nature of a magical power, which happens to be true, but in a bizarre way. And therefore, we can and should do something creative, constructive with thought, with squirrel mind, right? And so the moment a sense of identity arises to respond to the appearance of distractibility and suffering, then you could say the engine of the distractibility and suffering persists. See, realization is not remedial. That doesn't mean to suggest that we're not suffering by virtue of the movement of thought and identification and all of the sorrows and irritabilities that accompany that. But the remedy is not through mechanism, not through action, not through preference.
Like, I just want to beat it down, tame it.
And, yeah, that's right.
You know,
yeah.
Convince that it can be part
yeah.
of the game.
Yeah, you like any other human being, is absolutely happy being disembodied euphoria. And thought all of a sudden shows up and seems to be a buzzkill.
Yeah.
Right? And the sense of identity that is irritated by the presence of thought wants to be free from the implication of thought. But that sense of identity is also counterfeit.
I mean, I intellectually, I mean, well, however, I get that, but it's like, I don't want to be down and seeing it.
Why not? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, why not? I mean, go to every program or shaman that, you know, was within arm's reach that you feel like you can afford to participate in the lovely process of beating yourself into submissive euphoria.
Yeah. Yesterday, I actually said,
yeah, that's right. And you put it on every mirror in the house in lipstick. Did you just shut the fuck up?
How about that's what you said?
Now, appreciate that the effusive nature of whatever this is or isn't is ultimately responsible, though you can't really find it, for this profundity of identification and the presence and movement of thought and the disquietude that accompanies, right, how the affliction. It's all impersonal. It's occurring impersonally. That's why realization is, while it might be a remedy, it's not remedial.
Now, do you think these characters like?
Yes, the characters.
Do you think they've been able to sort of flip the whole thing so that their experience lands more in the realm of radiant presence than it does in the world of the squirrels in squirrel land?
next time you have the opportunity to speak with one of those types, you might as well ask.
Well, we're asking you.
Well, she wasn't asking me. She was asking me about them. I don't know about them.
I mean,
what?
Do you have more? Is your experience more in the realm of radiant presence, we'll call it, or more?
No, I would just say I complain and berate people with more joy than ever before.
Why do you love me so much? Amen.
We might have stumbled on a brand new enlightenment. Move over near Sagadatta. Move over, Adam Chexfield. There's a new guy in town.
Adam. I loved him.
Yeah. Well, you're that. You're always that.
The berating mean bitch.
That works.
I wasn't intending upon that, but I think it fits.
Just ask anybody in Pebble Hill.
Yeah. Drink.
Drink again. Every time you say Pebble Hill, it's thumbs up, bottoms up.
Pebble Hill drinking game.
Yep. Well, drink again.
I'm so high. It's a texture. It's a textural. It's truly a textural shift. So, if you are feeling sensation, then attentivity, right, the spaciousness and animation of attentivity is interested in sensation. While it's interested in sensation, it's not going squirrel mind. So what you are is really just roving fascination.
I mean, roving. I think I've experienced moments of that.
Your whole life, there's been nothing but roving fascination. When roving fascination becomes tethered or seduced or admiring of thought, then you lose sight of, you lose the texture and the euphoria of roving fascination, and then you occupy subjectivity and objectivity. And it's the occupying or the occupation of subjectivity and objectivity which is the, you could say, the genesis of suffering. So the journey back is ways of reinforcing in your present experience the gift, the quality of roving fascination without object. Roving fascination without subject.
That's why Peter says, if you've got a problem, look over here. Like, don't, like, dive into the problem. Like, you've got this problem. Look over here. Like, what else is there?
Diving into the problem can work, too, though. I don't know. To my experience.
It seems like it sometimes can be like the tar baby.
That when you say work, nothing happened in the first place that anything needs to intervene in.
By looking closely, you see that there's nothing there. That's the idea.
It could, yes, it could be, but it's stranger than that, right?
I don't mean diving into the problem like sitting down and writing a list of things. I mean just...
Yeah, letting it have you.
What's that?
Letting it have you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we talked about that before.
Like just sinking into it.
Well, you'll notice that this is what mind does. It reports on hypotheticals. Like in my past, I had a problem. One time, I dealt with it successfully by diving in.
Yeah.
Another time, I dealt with it successfully by looking over there, because Peter Brown suggested it, and I gave it a whirl. What the fuck are you talking about? But this is, this is not a condemnation. I mean, this is how we socialize. This is how we hang out. This is how we call, you know, the human biological terrorist gets along with itself. Party's on.
And when you're looking at it, you're in the subject-object mode. I don't know how that makes you think about it. You know.
Well, any consideration of a thing that might even smell as if it's true is untrue.
So this is a result, I believe, of the duality. And if every time you try to describe something, then you get that's what you get.
Well, all this can do is effervesce imaginarily in situ, on the spot. Mm-hmm. That's all it can do. It doesn't actually convey a universe that is the result of a Big Bang, or in which you find yourself as an objectionable or more or less acceptable life. Thanks a lot.
I have no problem with that.
You have a or no?
No problem.
Yeah.
But when you get into discussing any particular, then you're... I don't know. It's
make-believe.
It's slicing and dicing, you know?
Right. But yeah, of course. Which is a lot of fun. I mean, we've had a couple of really, you know, exciting world wars and genocides and bombs flying all over the place pretty much every day. Markets and libraries and hospitals being blown up. And I mean, we're having a lot of fun.
It's not boring. You got to give it that.
No.
So here's a thought that came to me. Run for the hills.
Yeah,
you were using a certain expression about feeling senses. I forget what that
would
was. But it had,
you can have one.
The connotation, I guess, of expansiveness.
Yeah, right.
So, and sort of full immersion, right?
Yeah.
So suffering is hitting me as its dualistic opposite. So now it becomes extremely narrow.
Right.
But it is at the same time fully engulfing.
Yeah.
It has that same quality.
That's right. Suffering is both narrow as a particularization, but it's also all consuming.
So it has the same quality as being immersive, but it's very small.
What moment could possibly avoid being entirely immersive? I mean, you can't dial this down.
Mm-hmm.
You can't dial it up. There's no knob where you can slow down or speed it up.
Mm-hmm.
Though you can do all kinds of interesting exercises and bend time. You know, bend the sensation of time, the observation of time.
Mm-hmm.
Drugs will do it. You know, meditation will do it. Runner's high will certainly do it.
Car accidents
will do it.
Yeah.
You know, the best Reuben in Doylestown will do it.
That's a product placement.
Truman Show.
Today's podcast
having a arugula salad instead of bacon.
There's a sneaking suspicion time is bending all the time.
Sure.
I love that invitation to take a look at. Cars have nothing to do with actually movement. They just bring things quickly towards you and past you, and you stay still.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
What an interesting way to look at it. Sort of an experience from a totally different frame of reference.
If joy turned out to have nothing to do with the resolution of your suffering, would you still be interested in it?
Oh, good. What's the question?
Yeah, because it would take away the feeling of wanting to get that. So it's still like, that's enough.
I toppled your omelet, so can you refresh one? It'll be right down. I tried to carry too much at one time.
You dropped it?
I did.
I was missing that.
No, I would never do that, but I kind of went like this, and it was just enough for an omelet, and I'll just hit a whoosh. So, everybody else is good?
Can I pop it?
Yep, I'll bring it over.
Okay, quick, dropped omelet on the menu.
Jeff, French country or drop? We don't do
like ranch. Yeah, I'll bring it down.
Yeah, thank you.
Wait a minute.
Is the water empty?
It's gonna be.
Okay, so here you go. Here's a fresh one. I sent her a coffee. It's right here, actually.
How would your present experience look and feel like if it didn't require a remedy?
That's pretty damn good. It's so simple, but when you think that you've almost never had a moment like that in your life, it's pretty sad.
Well, sure, you can manufacture sadness, you know, 24/7.
That's true.
What?
Jen, that we've had lots of them. That they show up, but we don't know. It's kind of like the news. The news makes big shit out of all this terrible stuff, but the reality of most existence is pretty normal. People eat, people sleep. The news makes it seem like it's just devastation everywhere. I don't think that's the case.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can say the news is a reflection of our own minds. Mm-hmm. We're kind of self-consumed with devastation mm-hmm. on a tiny scale, right? On an individual scale. Yeah, that's a lot of fun.
It's been fun.
I guess if you're selling freedom, some sort of bondage has to be emphasized.
That's right. That's right.
Or security, you know, if you're selling security, some sort of... around every turn, it might get you.
Realization as the revelation of not self is just not that popular. It's easier for the, you know, we average suffering human to either try to add something to our lives or heal, which means remove something from our lives, so that we can move forward in the hallucination of time in a more sanguine manner.
I wonder what sanguine means.
It means everything is coming up roses.
Which is weird, because isn't the root of it blood?
Sangre. Mm-hmm. Latin and Spanish.
Our habit is to turn to mind or turn to thought as a news reporting agency that tells the truth about what's not happening.
Don't we learn time and time again? You find out it's not accurate.
Well, the habit, you see, the conditioned habit, and we're, you could say we're brought up this way, though I certainly don't want to blame anything or anyone for the way this appears to be, because it's just not the way that it appears to be. But you can see, let's say in your own life, had you lived one, how the reinforcement that you were given from before, you can say you were pre-verbal, was about naming and conjuring and differentiation and communicating, right? And ultimately, you know, I don't know if anyone at this table was successful being toilet trained. We're working on it, you know. You might notice that the culture, whether it was the TV or your parents or your teachers, you know, no one said, hey, Johnny, how's the self-realization going today?
It was more like, you be this self, because this is the one that makes me feel better about myself.
I remember in that Deepak Chopra thing on Netflix, his son was saying when he was young, he'd go to his father and say, oh, there's boys are saying, calling me, like, racist names. And his father would just say, ah, they're just confusing their roles or something. something like that. The characters they're playing, reality. I mean, it's
very comforting. Thanks.
Yeah, very comforting.
Thanks, Dad.
Right, yeah. Okay.
Wow, Dad, you should be a famous author. You should live forever. That really helped.
I know what my father would say.
What would your dad say?
Actually, this was over a fight. It was very rare, obviously, fights. First response, did you get a few good licks in there? I said, Dad. That was his most important query. You know.
Uh-huh.
How'd you do, man?
You planted your knuckles squarely in someone's face. It was a sign of a good day.
When he was a youngster, his Model T and his buddies would go out. They looked for fights.
Yeah.
So did my older brother. Just to let off some testosterone.
That's so weird to me.
Yeah. I mean, apparently it's a guy thing, but I'm an odd one. Because,
I just can't even.
Because I'm just not.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, they do it.
What's kind of cool is that reference point of self is never fixed, really. What I thought was confusion in most of my life was actually a reality that it's never fixed. I'm not just a Capricorn. I'm not just a man. I'm not just this age. I'm not just this disposition because of a Hungarian mom, an Italian dad, whatever. And when anything in the world said, define yourself, I go, let's see, what do I... I could, well, you know, but... I pass.
Yeah.
Pass.
I can't make a statement about myself anymore without realizing I'm a total freaking liar.
Nice.
I mean, really, I can...
Won't be long now.
Good or bad. None of it really sticks. No. Maybe I'm not a liar.
Right. Wait a minute.
It's like, well, why am I even making this?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is real interesting that there's a certain kind of, let's call it, psychic space occurs consciously to reflect on the automaticity of thought, mind, and identification. Something actually gets in there and says, oh, wait a second.
It's very welcome.
Yeah. Right. 86 on the bleeding goat of myself.
Yeah. And it frees up energy. You're not defining yourself 24/7. You've got a lot more energy to deal with.
Yeah?
Who do we ask that question? Of course, it's just me.
It's always just you.
Are looking for a certain answer, and it's easier to just give it to them. Like, whether you believe it or not.
Why not? Oh, when it comes to communicating with muggles,
yeah.
Say whatever you have to and get out of there.
Otherwise, they're going to be like, should we call somebody?
Yeah, no, don't tell them about your actual condition.
I'm really worried.
Yeah, you have to do that in controlled circumstances, like breakfast at the Hattery.
Mm.
You can't tell the average person about your actual condition. They'll take your children away and then force you to have vaccinations.
Quarter should pass my way. That's cool. I think putting the condensation.
Dave, you want some cream cheese for your toast?
Hey, that'd be nice. Any other waters in this direction?
Sure. Love some, baby.
Because you really, you're sort of walking through. I'll take some damage.
Thanks, sir.
Kind of walking on rainbows.
Walking through the irrelevant. So, you know?
Don't get any freer than that.
Whatever you want to think, yep, that's what I'm doing.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no longer an inner authority. Right? If your inner authority is gone, then you're still showing up in the same old frivolous and irrelevant manner you've always shown up in, even though you fought against that tooth and nail, you don't care. This inner authority is like a bad case of good cop, bad cop. We're tortured. We torture ourselves with this inner authority, and no one ever says, may I see your papers? This is a secure area. You'll have to leave. Your ego ended up in your head by slipping through security. But it's not that difficult to say, well, if you don't have a badge, you'll have to leave.
But you know what? It's easier to just let them wander around.
Mm-hmm. That's right, yeah. Why don't you wander around, steal all the trade secrets and burn the place down, knock yourself out.
Don't put up any resistance.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Utah. I don't really have any power anyway. That's the deal. But there's no real power.
No.
Because the real juice is just this.
You know, the real juice is presence itself. But if we're always looking for a genesis or an explanation or a destination or a consequence or an explanation or whatever the hell that we're looking for, then the euphoria of presence itself is drowned out by our good intentions.
We were actually given what we want when we do that, I think. So let's say you want to kill the squirrel.
Yeah, kill the squirrel.
So go ahead. Like, it's like you're given, it gives you what you want. You know, you can kill a squirrel, you can go meditate, and you can transcend time. If that's what you want to do, go do that. Or not. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's all freedom.
So what do you do? Mm-hmm. You put the poison on the acorns, or what?
Well, you're free to. I mean, I'm just. This is just coming out. I don't know. You're free to pursue whatever it is for whatever reason you have.
Well, you're free to not be free. You're free
but
to enjoy the
you're
prison.
Actually free.
You're free.
Exactly.
I'm agreeing with you. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Since there's nothing at all, and since nothing happened a moment before now, and there's no actual consequence or genesis or author for what appears to be happening now, then all you've got is a self-fulfilling prophecy that's nonstop. But it doesn't really care what shows up in itself. So if you have an idea, then you could say that's the instantaneity of an imposed reality, which is not so. And it doesn't mind. Like, oh, you have an idea? Okay, it's that. Oh, you have an idea? Okay, you're that. Okay, tag, you're it. Tag, you're it. Tag, you're it. Okay, you're that. Oh, you want to be free from it? Okay, great. Let's go over here. What do you want now? I want this. Okay, well, great. How'd it go? Not so good. Fine. What else is on your mind? The hardest thing, which of course is not true, is that this has no destination. Curiously, it has no fulfillment. Right? So if I think I'm a creature that suffered, then I might be interested, if I had any brains, in some kind of fulfillment. And fulfillment would be something. You're not even really quite sure. If you asked 100 people, so what would fulfillment look like for you? You'd get probably 100 different answers with all kinds of, you know, weird...
All sorts of caveats.
All kinds of caveats and nuances about it.
I'd go on to say if you ask one person, you'd probably get 100 different...
If you ask one person, you'll get, yeah. If you ask one person 100 times...
Well, let's see. Let me think. Well, if I look at it this way...
You could say suffering is the presumption of stasis in evaporative dynamism.
What?
It's like constantly recalibrating itself in a weird sense.
Yeah.
It's like if it's stale, right? And it's constantly recalibrating itself. And you can, there's no, like, it's not like, oh, I calibrated it. Good. Yeah, yeah. 2 minutes later, you're like, well, I just obtained more data and actually.
Right. I was wrong.
Yeah, I got everything recalibrated.
No. Right. Yeah, it took me 35 years to calibrate to this point, and I have to start over. Well, I got to start over again. It's unlikely that a sense of self, which is the imagination of some kind of continuity, is going to find any satisfaction in something that that needs to recalibrate every single moment. It's not going to work.
Can I get a creme brulee?
Sure.
Make that too.
Okay.
Actually, what other desserts do you have?
I'll show you the list.
Okay.
I would like to...
It's going to be a decadent sun.
Well,
you all better walk afterwards.
Yeah. All this talk of nothing matters.
Yeah.
Okay, get dessert.
Oh, my God. They have cookies and cream mousse. Oh, my God. I'm so glad.
What's wrong with a few pounds if I'm not going anywhere anyway?
Does it really matter?
I'm not looking into the past future. I'm looking into the creme brulee present.
That's right. There is no consequence for the way that I eat.
Tell that to your non-existent doctor.
Well, after this, I'm going to go buy a scale, so I think I should eat up.
And drink a lot of liquid. So
dessert menu?
Put them so
you know what you want?
Oh, yeah.
No oil.
Oh, we put the fun martinis.
I like the repetition theory. Like, without repetition for a week on vacation, I started making plans. It's like, oh yeah, I gotta work this, I gotta do this. It comes back in pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
The whole, oh yeah, okay, this is what I gotta do now.
Yeah.
Funny.
Yeah.
I'll have the cookies and cream mousse.
Cookies and cream, creme brulee. Anybody else?
Okay.
You're not getting fired. It's almost irresistible now. It's irresistible to avoid planning for the future. Like, you so want to plan for the future. Well, if I do this, then. Like, there's all this negotiation. One of the things I picked up in my travels was the invitation to no manipulation. And it's like constant manipulation, like Lisa was saying, beat yourself over the head, do something with these thoughts, do something with the plan. And to sit with no manipulation is in just this. It does not come in. Does not. And I think that's why the repetition is actually helpful. Like, I was jonesing to come back and Thursday, Friday, Sunday. Like, I couldn't wait to get back. So, kind of the invitation, the reminder that.
We like ourselves when we're nothing at all.
Mm-hmm.
pardon me there, darling. Kimberly's aren't ready quite yet.
What
kind of mousse do you have? I didn't look at
the cookies and cream.
Rich chocolate.
And then there's, yeah.
Do you have chocolate?
Take a look.
Because it's chocolate if you have it.
Yeah. Is there chocolate on there?
Yeah.
It is a chocolate. I didn't know if it had anything else on there.
What else is there?
I don't even see chocolate mousse, but
there's bread pudding. There's
thank you.
Did you see a chocolate mousse?
I'll have a bread pudding.
Cookies and cream mousse. Okay. Rich chocolate mousse.
A moment
no, I don't want the cookies.
If we keep talking about it, the creme brulee will be done.
I'll have the bread pudding.
Okay.
And if you could put whipped cream on it,
sure.
It would be lovely.
Of course.
And some ice.
Grand Marnier bread pudding.
Caramel.
Whoa.
Oh, no.
Sounds good.
Grand Marnier is good.
What's that?
Cindy? Cindy?
I like it.
Thanks.
It's good, though.
I'll try some of the
bread pudding. Yeah. I mean, I haven't had it in years, but I remember liking it.
Thank you.
I don't mean to take the wind out of anybody's sails. Shouldn't all just sit around and be happy? That'd be stupid.
Oh, now I remember.
Well, there you go.
We like to berate us. I forget the rest of that.
Now I remember. The train of thought of... Dan mentioned, you mentioned that, how you look forward to recycling. What actually does this do to me, or is doing to me? And there's a lot of thoughts that come through this processor here.
Yeah.
And when I dance here, it's like a getting a wash. They still happen, but they have more fun. They're less sticky, you might say. And the pond is fresher because the inlet and the outlet seem to be less blocked. Even though, of course, at the center of all that is a self that's improving. Can't get away from that. Can't get away from it. What can I say?
Tell it on yourself. You've come so far, Dave.
But I'm in the opposite as far as planner. I to this day, I'm not a planner.
You can boil it down, you know, for fun. And whatever this is or isn't, is quite astute at imagining itself to be other than itself. The whole world comes into being in that same instant, not a moment later. There is no big bang that happens at a point in time that begets a universe after the fact. Whatever this is or isn't imagines itself to be other than itself. Wah, fucking blah.
Right. Me and the world. A better me and a better world.
Yes. And so everything that arises in phenomenality, subjectivity, objectivity, suffering, and, you know, grandeur appears within the plasma of this appearing to be other than itself. At the same, not that there is anything other than this, or time to suggest something before another thing, because there's just not, but the same radiant weirdness that is profoundly capable of imagining itself to be other than itself can also not do that.
And it's not something we can bring about. That's been pretty...
Well, it's always nonstop expressing in both platitudes. Other than itself, not other than itself.
Yet that in that activity is one unified field. It's not really a multiplicity of separate fields distinct from other fields.
Yes, right. There's the unicity of absolute inclusivity, which is never other than itself, though it can appear with a degree of pixelation that will knock your socks off. So squirrel mind, right, appears as one of a thousand other permutations of apparent specificity or pixelation, which can be disturbing. because identification as something other than what this already is, you can say, the root of disturbance. Aversion and attraction or desire is like just not even on the playing field. Not at all on the playing field. I'm surprised they let the Buddha get away with such stupid remarks.
What is on the playing field?
This can forget itself.
Oh, I see what you mean, because that implies an improved self or an awakened self.
The imagination of self-free. So-called aversion and attraction for you as a person or a biologic field is like a symptom that's 1,000 years down track. It's already completely within the field of symptom. It's not causative. It's not. There's no point in doing anything about it. There's no point in doing anything about yourself.
Because it's a conjured thing anyway.
Because it's absolutely conjured.
So you conjure it to fix it. To conjure it to fix it. To conjure it to fix it.
Then you party from, call it conception, birth, or death, in a big conjuring. You know, and kill the infidels if, you know, you got a few spare moments. Kill them good.
There's always time.
There's always time for killing some infidels. I mean, I can't just sit on my hands and enjoy my blissful nature. I have to go out and, you know, kill some non-believers. Otherwise, what would my life amount to?
The truth is sacred. Sacred.
Yeah, I mean, you have a total disinterest in infidels, whoever they might be.
Yes, and those infidels are the squirrels in your mind. Total disinterest in squirrel. It doesn't mean it has to. The infidel squirrels that have to be trapped, poisoned, and drowned in the pool.
I got news for you. When you hide in your hair, they're in there.
Yeah. Really. I am out of here. I am so hiding in my hair.
No, they're in the back.
So there's you need not go to the tippy top of a mountain to have the, you could say, the revelatory realization that this, while it's happy to forget itself, can also remember itself. You don't have to go anywhere.
Thank goodness, because at the top of the mountain,
it's cold.
I'm a little afraid. This brother told me, we're going to fall in love.
Oh, I've seen that before. Wrong side of the road driving.
Which side of the road did you drive? There's no guardrail.
Yeah, but the guardrail's over there. Lisa, right side, right side.
Just one time stay I'm on through. The road at all costs. So,
my little mind has come up with a little saying.
Uh-oh.
It works that way.
Oh, good. Your dinosaur-sized Tyrannus Rex pea mind.
That's right. Pat is to this as bread pudding is to pat.
Nice. There you go. The poem to end all poems.
That means you're no more significant than bread pudding.
Well, hell, that I knew. But it's sort of like a diversion. And it's enjoyable.
Well, thank God we finally discovered our mascot, bread pudding.
That's
night sky Sunday. Have a slice on us.
In college, I had to take a course. I can't take one of those.
Yeah. I learned that.
Maybe that's the way out. Maybe that's the puzzle way out.
Right. Now, you know, if you go to a 12-step meeting and you suggest to a group of illustrious recoveries that, thank you so much, that there's no such thing as choice or self-will or anything like that, even though they appear to be dedicated to relinquishing their life to a higher power, oftentimes they will take umbrage.
Thank you.
With the accusation that this is arising absolutely impersonally. But not just them, you know, not picking on our fellows in the recovery community.
Even if they maintain that they have no control, don't
fuck with
it.
That's right. That's right. Don't fuck with
it. The reality of it is sort of that you don't have control, so in a way that's throwing something there.
However, that there's, you know.
Bad desserts working on her all.
The nuts, are they pure or are they?
So this can be a little disorienting because in your training as an adult, a person, an educated, employed professional, you may not recall having any education about what you might do with disembodied euphoria. One's conditioning is all about myth. Living within the realm of, you know, being a useful human somehow. I don't remember anyone coming to, you know, my school that said, "Hey, kids, you're really just disembodied euphoria, and as that starts to unfold in your life, it's going to feel a little strange, and let's walk through it so that you're not too intimidated."
And you have to let the taffy stick a little. You can't just break it.
That's right. And you have to let the taffy warm.
So warm the taffy up. Work that taffy.
Well, the biggest, work the taffy.
The biggest lie is, I guess, I don't know if it's a lie or not, but it's like I'll become a dysfunctional human. Like I won't be able to do this.
True that.
If that has
Well, that's the implication of, you know, all these religious systems and bodies. I mean, to Buddhism's credit, you know, maybe Hinduism as well, there's, you could say, public acknowledgement of revelation, realization, profound states or whatever, and those are appreciated.
And here, they get your medical assistance.
You don't get that. You don't get that in run-of-the-mill, you know, Christianity or Judaism.
Medieval Christianity, I think you said.
In which?
Medieval Christianity.
Well, in Gnostic, yeah.
Mystical.
Yeah, in Gnostic or mystical.
Now we don't believe it, you know, but then they did.
He said it was like water and
that's the water. Because too many people were lying, you know, creating.
The church couldn't make any money on that. And you can't even have an organization around it.
You know, it's all free. It would be a free for all.
So you arrive at a point in your so-called adult life where through some, you know, curious circuitry, you end up having a conversation about the nature of mind or the nature of consciousness or disembodied euphoria or the collapse of space-time or the imagination of your life or any of a number of playful, if not evocative, themes that, you know, we might kick around. And you're not just here for entertainment's sake, or because this is a philosophy class that happens to be free, even though they serve sour desserts. Right? You're here, I would imagine, for some other kind of intimate, call it a reason, right? Call it a vector. Something's going on in you, in your life, in your sine wave, in your trajectory that is interested in tasting, touching, playing around with a transmutation in the foundation of consciousness, which is different than acquiring things to improve your humanness. And there's no map. You can read I Am That 15 times. There's no map. There's just a guy exhorting all kinds of Sanskrit, you know, beatitudes about the nature of consciousness, and they can be very evocative. They can actually communicate something profound to you. Still, it's, you know, there's no map.
We're like, we've gone back to kindergarten to have you come in and tell us about how to live with disembodied euphoria.
That's right. So, kids, it looks like this. Fuck you, fuck me, and fuck this. Relax and go bowling. Yay! Yay!
But you know what the interesting thing is? I think that a lot of kids do experience disembodied euphoria.
I think they you do?
Where they come from.
They're a kid and they're kind of like bathing and they're like, you know.
And we insist that they snap out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There you go. You get trained into separation.
How about a little Ritalin? Get you on the...
Yeah, you should snap out of that disembodied euphoria and become something useful.